Welcome to Oak City Church, a family of learners, lovers, and givers sent. For more information, visit us online at oakcitychurch.com. Let us know if we can help you in any way. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for joining us tonight on Christmas Eve. Christmas is a crazy season that seems to be getting just a little bit crazier. Every year, like, the Christmas music starts earlier. What month did the Christmas music start in your house? November. I know there's an August out there. There's always an August. And what month does the Christmas stuff show up in, like, Costco or Lowe's or wherever? June. Yeah. Yeah, as soon as they get rid of the Halloween stuff, it's the Christmas stuff. And so there's all that stuff. We get the boxes. We got like a million bins in our garage that got to come down. They come down now before Thanksgiving. We got to do all the decorating. We got to put the lights up. There's baking to do. There's shopping to do. There's wrapping to do. There's end of year work stuff that you have to finish. There's parties to go to. There's money to spend. Now there's going to be credit card bills that you're going to have to pay off. And there's travel. A lot of travel that happens, and there's family, and that's cool sometimes. So family, that can be, you know, the whole thing. And so it's crazy, and it's stressful, and I love it. I love Christmas. It's great stuff. But sometimes it feels like we're doing so much stuff, and we're distracting ourselves. Like, sometimes it feels like on purpose we're distracting ourselves from thinking about the thing that we're celebrating with Christmas. And that's, I kind of love Christmas Eve as much as anything I love about Christmas, for a few minutes just to be focused in on the thing that we're focusing in on. And there was a Christian, I read this a couple years ago, a Christian philosopher from like the 1800s who, he thought this about Christmas, but he thought it about Christianity in general, that it's so much, that the proposition of Christ and what it means for us is so much, like it's too much for us to handle, and so we will either dumb it down a little bit, or we'll distract ourselves so we don't have to, like, handle the whole thing. And the illustration that he gave for this was, this is a European guy in the 1800s, so they still were there, kind of. You know that there's a peasant, and the peasant gets invited to the king's castle to have dinner with the king. And for the peasant, this is crazy, because the king doesn't know who the peasant is. He's a peasant, and so this seems a little bit surreal. But maybe, and so he's going to do it, and it could be like his life's highlight that he gets to go to dinner at the king's castle. It's something he'll tell his grandkids about. And so you may have had like a brush with greatness that's like this. I had a neighbor. He lived behind us for like 12 years. His name was Ephraim. He was about my dad's age, and Ephraim was in Vietnam. He got exposed to Agent Orange, so he's on disability. And Ephraim was a super nice guy. He wasn't all there all the time, and he was getting older, you know. So, and he would tell you a story. So if I walked the dog, he would sit in his truck in his driveway at night. Like, that's when you saw him, at night. I don't know what he was doing in the truck, but he was always there. And if you wanted to talk, you'd walk the dog down that side of the road. And if you didn't, you walked down the other side and you waved, you know. And it just depended on how much time I had. So one night I'm talking to him, and he tells me that when he was in Vietnam, he was in the bush, and his CO told him, hey, you need to, like, we're going to fly you out of here, and we're going to take you to, I don't know, Hanoi, Saigon, whatever. And you're going to this big dinner, and you have to go there. So there's a lot of people, and he is sitting across the table from the President of the United States of America, Lyndon Baines Johnson. And he's like, it was crazy. I'm like, that is crazy, Ephraim. And he's unbelievable. And I'm like, that is unbelievable. In fact, I don't believe it. I didn't say that to him, but I really was like, I don't even know what to think about that, Ephraim, because you're a funny guy. You can make stuff up. Well, a year ago, his daughters come, and they're going to take him to Atlanta because he can't live on his own anymore. I heard about his daughters. He talked about them a lot. I didn't believe in them because they had never been there. And they're there, like, emptying his stuff out. And I pull one of his daughters aside. I'm like, hey, your dad's a great guy. I'm going to miss your dad. Really appreciate him. Man, he told some crazy stories. He's like, yeah, he can tell some crazy stories. I said, well, he told this one crazy story about being in Vietnam and getting pulled out of the bush and eating dinner with the President of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson. I was like, that story? She's like, oh, that one was true. I'm like, that is nuts, you know? Like, does anybody have a brush with greatness story? None of you? No one has a brush with anybody great. Who is it?
I served Oprah.
You served Oprah. There you go. Make something up. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. And so we can have something like that happen. And the guy goes on in the story, and he says that when the peasant goes to the king's table and eats dinner with him, the king's like in the middle of dinner, he's like, hey, I want you to do something for me. And the peasant's like, sure, whatever you want. He's like, I want you to marry my daughter. And the peasant's like, well, wait, what? Like, you don't even know me. I don't even know you. You call me here, and you want me to marry your daughter? Like, that's insane. And that's the type of thing that he's like, Christianity takes it a step far where it's like, this is nuts. It would be like if Ephraim's sitting across from Lyndon Baines Johnson, this wouldn't have happened for several reasons, but if Lyndon Baines Johnson's like, Ephraim, I want you to marry my daughter. Like, that doesn't make sense. Or if you had like a brush with greatness, with your celebrity crush, you just kind of met them someplace and they're like, hey, will you marry me? Like, you would think there's a camera somewhere and this is going to be on TikTok later today. You know what I mean? Like, you're getting punked when this happens. And so this guy, this philosopher goes on and says it's so much that the peasant like gets angry at the person suggesting that this is the reality of it. That it must be a joke, that someone's making fun of him for being a peasant and pointing out the fact that this would never, ever happen to him because he's a peasant. And so this philosopher is suggesting that Christianity is an outlandish proposition that unless you accept it completely, what you'll end up doing at some level is finding it either ridiculous and or like somewhat offensive, and so you'll distract yourself from the core of it and dumb it down a little bit. And sometimes that's what Christmas feels like. Like, I think we get that. If we had a brush with greatness, pick your president that you would want to go to the White House and have dinner with, and you might have to go back a few presidents to figure out who that might be. You know what I mean? Like, it might be fine, but whatever, you know. For me, it would be, in recent memory, it'd be Reagan. If I went to dinner with Reagan, and Reagan's like, and this was a whole other thing, like, I want you to marry my daughter, like, because she was a piece of work, you know? So, like, no. But if he was like, I want to adopt you as my son. I just want you around. Like, you can fly out to the ranch in California. We'll ride horses together. Like, you would think, this is, like, you really are senile. Like, that can't really happen. It just doesn't make sense that someone like that would invite someone like you into a place in their life that doesn't make sense based on the relationship that you've had. And he's saying, this is what Christmas is like for us. Like, it's too much, so we distract ourselves. And it is a lot. Christmas is a lot. Like, Easter is a lot. Christmas is more. The resurrection, a guy dying and coming back to life, is kind of like someone gets really, really, really sick, and then they get better on steroids. You know what I mean? We can kind of see that happening. The incarnation, Christmas, is the God that created 2 trillion galaxies stuffing all of that power and majesty down, like just stuffing it down and stuffing it down, stuffing it down and stuffing it down and stuffing it down. Can you, like, into a baby? Like, that baby had to be like bursting with stuff and just stuffing it down into a baby and saying, well, here you go. And a vulnerable, helpless, anything could happen to that baby comes from heaven to earth, walks among us for 30-some years, dies at our hands, rises from the dead. And he does it because this God wants to have a personal, and it is all so personal. God is personal. If we are personal and he made us, he is personal. Jesus is the thing that's like, it's super personal, y'all. He comes from heaven to earth to have a personal relationship with you so that you can spend eternity with him. The God who created all of it, the God who knows everything that's happening, that knows you intimately, loves you personally, gave up heaven to come down here, live with you, and die for you. That is a lot. And he's saying it's so much that unless you accept it completely, you'll kind of dumb it down or distract yourself from it. And so we do that and start talking about like the Christmas spirit or the holiday spirit. We adopt some beliefs about God that are a little more rational. We stop believing in the supernatural parts of the story and instead make God like an impersonal force in our world who probably rewards the good and punishes the bad a little bit like Santa, you know? And it makes it easier to swallow. And we have occasional brushes with his greatness without having to try to comprehend the idea that when he came from heaven to earth, he said, this little baby is going to be the groom, and you, the people, the church, are going to be the bride. And that's the picture that it extrapolates into. And he does want you to be a part of the family forever. Like, that's why he came. He wants to marry us. And that's Christmas. So I hope for a few minutes, like, that sets in on us. You know, and Christmas Eve to me is the lull in the storm. It's the eye in the hurricane where we get a few moments to contemplate in peace and quiet what it's really about. And it's really about the God who created the universe having a deep concern for your personal story and wanting to redeem you so that you can live the life he made you to live and that you can live with him forever. And the way he does this is incredibly by sending the one through whom and by whom and for whom you and the rest of the universe was created for, by sending him into the world to show you exactly what God is like, to show you the life that you were made to live it for you, to die in your place for the sins that you've committed that you cannot die for yourself, and then to rise from the dead to give you the hope that death is not the end, but life is. That's Christmas. John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shines in the darkness. And the darkness has not overcome the light. And that Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and full of truth. Merry Christmas.